Book lovers, get out a pen and paper. It's time for Summer Reads on Maine Calling. Most of Maine is supposed to hit temps in the 80s tomorrow. For many of you, I know that means dusting off the beach chair, heading straight for the ocean or lakefront, sticking your feet in the water, and cracking open a good book. Eager for suggestions? Lucky for you, the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance last night revealed the winners of its 2016 Maine Literary Award, so that's a good place to start. You can check out our Facebook page and see the list. And you can listen up for the next hour as we share our enthusiasm for some of the wonderful books at your local bookstore and library. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Lily King and Josh Bodwell are here to share their suggestions. Which are yours? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Do you have a love-hate relationship with book lists? You love the idea of reading great books, but hate that you don't often get to everything on your list? Well, if that's you, I have good and bad news for you. Today is our Summer Reads program, and if you have a pen in hand, you're going to make a list. In the studio with me to share thoughts on what to read or not read this summer, Lily King. She's the author of four novels. Her most recent, the 2014 novel Euphoria, won the Kirkus Award for Fiction, the New England Book Award for Fiction, and was a finalist in the National Book Critics Circle Awards. Josh Bodwell, a regular guest here, one of our favorite guests, executive director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. As always, we want to hear from you. Which books are you looking forward to reading this summer? Which would you like to enthusiastically recommend to your fellow Maine Calling listeners? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Josh, since you've been here a few times, I'm going to start with Lily King. Lily, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
And why don't I start with this question? Do you read differently in the summertime than you do the rest of the year?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I like to imagine that I read in a hammock. I like to imagine that I'm doing more reading outside. But I think I read probably just as much, maybe a little bit more. I hope.
That's one of the conundrums of this program, I think, is that we all imagine ourselves in a hammock, or I imagine myself on a beach chair. But summer's also so busy for people who live in Maine. This is when the house guests arrive.
True.
This is when everybody has these great parties, and there are all sorts of wonderful outdoor events, whether you like music or nature. So, I think that we like to think of ourselves reading, you know, knocking off 25 books in a summer. But maybe, I don't know, Josh, what about you? Do you read more in the summer, less in the summer, differently in the summer?
Reading goes so hand in hand with taking swims in lakes and ponds and rivers with my daughter. So I always, I'm always reading on the shore because she'll swim for maybe five times as long as I do. So I do get a lot of reading done in the summer. And I also, I saw this great list of tips about how to read more. And I was so happy that two of them I think I do all the time that have really stuck with me, which are just always have your book with you.
Right.
You know, in your bag, in your car, mm-hmm. wherever. And know what you're going to read next.
Oh,
it's a great tip, isn't it?
That is a good tip. What else is on the list? What is on the list of tips to read more?
Those two have stuck with me the most.
You don't remember the other three? No, those are terrific tips. And I believe, I might be quoting this wrong. I believe Jackie O's advice was always have a book with you. You're never bored. So I hope if it's somebody else who had said that I'm not attributing it to the wrong person. Josh, we have pretty good timing today. There was kind of an event last night, right?
Big event. The 2016 Maine Literary Awards. Every year, the last Thursday of May. Should I go through the list?
Sure.
Okay. It's such a great platform that you guys allow us to spread the news about these amazing books each year. So for the listeners, this list of books, these were all books that were published in the calendar year of 2015, making them eligible for this year's award. So these are all the book awards. In fiction, Closer All the Time by Jim Nichols. In crime fiction, An Unbeaten Man by Brendan Riley. In speculative fiction, The Realm of Misplaced Hearts by Rick Hobbs. In nonfiction, Love and Other Ways of Dying by Michael Paterniti. In memoir, How to Cook a Moose by Kate Christensen. In poetry, Little Arias by Kristen Case. In young people's literature, Either the Beginning or the End of the World by Terry Farish. In the children's category, The Lemonade Hurricane by Licia Morelli. The Book Award for Anthology, A Gateless Garden by Liza Bakewell. The John N. Cole Award for Main-Themed Nonfiction goes to Ghost Buck by Dean Bennett. The Excellence in Publishing Award is for the Historical Atlas of Maine. That was published by the University of Maine Press. And then we have a Drama Award. This year's Drama Award went to Monica Wood for her play The Papermaker. And then we have this great short works categories. And I want to mention these because these are people we're likely to see in the future when they have full books out if they don't already. In fiction, it was Douglas Milliken. Nonfiction, Penny Geisinger. Poetry, David Sloan. And then in the youth competition, all three of these writers are going to be featured this Sunday in the audience section of the Portland Press Herald. For fiction, that's Greg Nam. Nonfiction, Emma Levy. And poetry, Lizzie Lemieux.
And if you couldn't write quickly enough, we've posted the list on our MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page. You can just go there. And I love that you mentioned that Jim Nichols, Closer All the Time, won for fiction because he was one of our Maine Calling Book Club books. And this was one of our Maine Calling Book Club books. And when we did the program back in September, Jim called in. So I'm going to play a little bit of that for you. Jim here is talking about when he was a young author trying to get noticed. He happened to work at an airport in Maine, and a very small airport, and he knew that Norman Mailer would be passing through.
I was trying to sell short stories at the time and had published a few in little tiny magazines, but I had higher aspirations, as we all do. And I noticed that Mailer was on the flight manifest coming up from Boston, stopping in Rockland, and then going on to Bar Harbor, where he had a summer home. I brought a little magazine in that I had a story published in, and I accosted him on the airplane. Yeah, Mailer looked up and saw me trudging down the aisle holding this magazine. And he knew exactly what was going on, but there was no way he could escape me. So I asked him to take a look at it, and I said, "I don't want anything from you. All I want is to know that Norman Mailer read one of my stories, and you can leave it in the seat pocket." And Mailer kind of grimaced and looked at me and said, "Well, that's a new one." But he said, "All right," and he took it. When the plane came back through, the magazine wasn't in the seat pocket. A couple weeks later, he came back through, and I happened to be waiting on the ramp.
Just happened to.
Yeah. And then I just stood there after a little while. So he came down the steps and said he would like the story. And then he asked if I had anything a little more ambitious. So I reached into my pocket and pulled out another manuscript.
Nice. Okay, Lily King, did you do anything nearly as outrageous when you were a young author trying to get noticed?
Oh, I wish I had had the gumption to do something like that. I remember waiting tables in Harvard Square, and Jane Ann Phillips came in with her family, and she was one of my favorites. And they were there for Mother's Day, and I remember just rattling the cups, serving her. And of course, I couldn't bring myself to say that I admired her work or that I was a writer or anything like that. That's kind of my biggest brush with fame that I took no advantage of, or I didn't even say my compliments to her.
Well, maybe I'll turn this around now that you are the famous author. Do you have people bringing you manuscripts, and how do you handle that?
I do. I mean, mostly people, yes, ask me to read it and to blurb it, and I try to do absolutely everything, read everything that I can. And sometimes I'm on overload and I can't get to everything. And then sometimes I can. And it's hard to do everything.
I can imagine. Oh, my gosh. I can imagine it would be very hard. Rick Russo has talked about how hard it is, how much he really wants to and does support young authors. But, there are only so many hours in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So
Rick does such a great job. He is amazing, amazingly supportive.
So when we booked this program, someone let us know that it's possible that you two disagree on what might be on a summer reading list. Josh, you want to tell me what that's about?
I think I was just trying to fan the flame.
he's always trying to fan the flames.
Well, you know, the governor's appearance was so, you know, so exciting. I wanted a little bit of that audience, maybe, if I pretended we disagree.
Okay, so what?
Well, I was teasing Lily about her calling Elizabeth Strout's book, Olive Kittredge, a novel.
This was in an email that I wrote sort of haphazardly, absentmindedly, just called it a novel. It's a collection of short stories. I understand that.
And the bottom line was actually, though, the real part of the story was that how much we both loved her new book, My Name is Lucy Barton.
Oh, so great.
Stunning, stunning
Everybody
book.
Should be reading that book this summer.
Yeah. Okay, so there's the first recommendation of the program. We're at 1:15, and My Name is Lucy Barton by Elizabeth Strout. A wonderful, wonderful book. Lily King, what's number two?
Ooh. Old Filth. I'm always recommending Old Filth, but have you read it, Josh?
No.
Old Filth, by whom?
It's by Jane Gardam, and she is about a maybe 87-year-old English woman about now, and it is about a Raj orphan, and it spans 90 years of this man's life, and it is poignant and beautiful and really one of the books, best books I've ever read.
Old Filth, as in F-I-L-T-H?
Yes, which stands for Failed in London, Try Hong Kong. He's a lawyer.
Okay.
And, very famous lawyer.
And so the audience knows I will be taking notes during this program, but I may not keep up. So try to take your own notes as well. Josh Bodwell, what else is on your list?
In terms of new books, we can't get too far into this without talking about Everybody's Fool by Richard Russo. I know he's been on recently, but that book has been we've been waiting since Nobody's Fool came out, hoping for a sequel. So we can't mention that book enough.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I loved it. Loved it. You haven't read it yet. It's wonderful. Anything else?
I just read and loved Simon Van Boy's new novel, Father's Day. I felt it beautifully captured the voice of a recovering alcoholic who's trying to raise his niece whose parents have been killed. He had been estranged from his family due to just a bad turn in life that he took. And he really finds his way back to life and love by raising his niece. Beautiful, tender book.
Lily, do you read mainly fiction or do you have some nonfiction to recommend as well?
I do read mainly fiction. I'm so excited by so many books by Mainers that have just come out. Monica Wood's One in a Million Boy. I'm dying to read. I can't wait to get my hands on that. I can't wait to read Jib Nichols' book. And also a really lovely book that is sort of a collaboration of prose, poetry, and photography is Stop Here, This Is a Place by Susan Conley and Winky Lewis. Just stunning photographs and beautiful short prose poems that go with the photographs. Lovely, lovely book.
I looked up some other organizations and publishers' summer reading lists, and one that popped up was Newsday's. And what's interesting to me, you mentioned Maine authors, only 12 books on this list. One is by a Maine author, Stephen King, and one is about Maine, a book set on Monhegan Island, The Miracle on Monhegan Island by Elizabeth Kelly, who lives in Ontario. So, you know, our the outsized influence, Josh, of Maine and Maine authors is holding steadfast.
No question. Question. Growing.
Even New York publications are sort of acceding. What about nonfiction for you? What are you crazy about?
A ton of nonfiction. I just read and just ate up Bill Bryson's latest book, The Road to Little Dribbling.
What is that about? I love Bill Bryson, but I don't know about this.
So whatever it was, 20 or 30 years ago, he wrote Notes from a Small Island, where he traveled around England by public transportation or by foot. It was sort of his goodbye when he moved back to the States. So now, whatever it is, 20 or 30 years later, he's returned and done the same trip. And looking at it sort of crankier and funnier than ever. That's wonderful. Much less funny but fascinating, John Ronson's So You've Been Publicly Shamed. Phenomenal book that looks at social media and shaming and even touches on New England and Maine in a couple cases. Of course, the Puritans. By Maine authors, American Character by Colin Woodard. His follow-up to American Nations is, Colin can just take all these big ideas and boil them down to this incredibly readable work. And The President's Salmon by Catherine Schmidt. If you love, you're nodding about that. You know that one? Have you?
It's on my pile to my desk.
Good. Yeah. Fascinating take on the Penobscot.
Okay. So, Lily, I think you might have done this a little bit before, but I want to ask each of you before we go to a break. You know, we've been talking a lot about recent books. If we go back, you know, through all of literary history and someone asks you, if you have never read this book, do so right away. Last summer, Don Quixote was recommended to me. I still haven't read it, but I will. What is your, if you have never read, fill in the blank, you must?
Well, Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen, Sense and Sensibility by Jane Austen, Middlemarch by George Eliot. I would say those are my three tops.
To the Lighthouse?
Oh, well, of course, okay. The Lighthouse. I was going way back.
Okay.
To the Lighthouse and Mrs. Dalloway, absolutely. I'm constantly rereading those books.
What about you, Josh?
I guess I would go, May is National Short Story Month, which always gets forgotten. April gets all that attention with the poets. So I'll name some short story writers. I would say Chekhov. If you haven't really dug into Chekhov, go back to Chekhov. Go back to Hemingway's First in Our Time. Yeah, those two.
Have you read Sunstroke by Tessa Hadley? Which is not way back. It's contemporary. But
no, but I've read some of the. I haven't read the whole collection, but some of her stories because of you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, do you like her?
Oh, yeah. She's fantastic. Yeah,
amazing.
So both one of our producers, Cindy Hahn, and I are recommending to everybody, if you haven't read All the Light We Cannot See, you must. That would be my addition to your list of if you have not read this, you must. So go on.
What about Independent People? Has anybody read that? That's by Haldor Laxness, and he won the Nobel Prize in 1955, I believe. And it's set in Iceland, and it is such a brilliant book that is very much forgotten, I think, now.
That's a great way to read, is actually to go back and look at some of those 50s and 60s and 40s Nobel winners, Knut Hampson's Hunger.
I'm reading it right now, actually.
Some of those books that just, for whatever reason, we're not reading them today, but they are stunning.
Well, guess what? We have to take a break. After the break, we're going to hear from you. What books do you want to recommend to our fellow readers? Or do you have some opinions about some of the books we've talked about so far? Feel free to give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Our email, talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does State Theater in Portland, presenting Public Radio's The Moth Main Stage Tour, Saturday, June 4th. Tickets available at statetheaterportland.com.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, I'll talk with Lena Dunham about turning 30, about the end of Girls, and how she's bucking the millennial trend and standing by Hillary Clinton.
I don't mind the idea of having somebody who's a member of the establishment, because guess what? The government is an establishment. If all I wanted was a female in the White House, why wouldn't I have been running around behind Sarah Palin fixing her skirts?
Lena Dunham, next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Join us for the New Yorker Radio Hour, coming up tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock and again Sunday evening at 11. Our new Maine Public Classical Channel offers close to 160 hours a week of classical music, including the classical music you may have listened to here on Maine Public Radio. Morning Classical with Robin, our evening concert, and our Saturday afternoon opera. We now have new FM classical frequencies in Bangor, 106.1, Waterville, 99.7, Freiburg, 91.5, and 104.1 in Portland. You can also hear Maine Public Classical statewide on the HD channel of this existing Maine Public Radio frequency with a special receiver, and you can stream it at mpbn.net. We have complete information, our new program schedules, and how to find and listen to Maine Public Classical online at mpbn.net. And thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, suggestions for your summer reads. In the studio with me, Josh Bodwell. He's Executive Director of Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. Lily King's also with us. Her 2014 novel, Euphoria, won multiple national awards and was named one of the 10 best books of 2014 by the New York Times Book Review. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net. tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to start with Steve calling from. Steve, where are you calling from?
I'm in Oxbow. It's pretty far north Maine.
Wow. What's it like up there right now?
Pretty cloudy, tons of bugs.
Maybe they'll burn off tomorrow when it's in the 80s.
I sure hope so.
What do you want to recommend?
Well, I don't know about everyone else, but I really like finding good gems from self-published authors or from, you know, small publishing companies. And it's really hard to sift through all the good stuff, you know, because there's so many questionable books in terms of quality and things like that when it's open to pretty much anyone to self-publish. But there's two that I've found that I really like. One of them is by Mark Slade, and he was a pretty well-known actor, a Western actor in the 50s and 60s, and he's originally from Massachusetts, but went up to Maine when he was a kid. And he wrote a book called Going Down Maine, and it's a pretty easy read. I really like easy reads in the summer, but have, you know, pretty good substance to it. So that's a really good book I'd like to recommend. And then the other one is by an author out of Utah. His name is James O'Connor, and it's a series of short stories that pretty much deal with what a younger man in this day and age deals with in terms of, you know, religious issues or relationship issues, family issues, and I really recommend those two.
Great. And what's the name of the book of short stories?
James O'Connor.
Oh, it's by James O'Connor. Does he not have a name of the book itself?
Oh, it's called His Heart, the Crucible.
Okay, great. It's an interesting point that Steve brings up, because I think all of us would love to, you know, be able to find those self-published authors. We know there are wonderful self-published authors out there, but boy, so many books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well over a million books a year hitting the market in America.
So hard. But thank you, Steve, for doing some of the culling for us. And we will add your recommendations to our list that we'll post on the Facebook page after the program. Going to Lee in South Portland. Hi, Lee. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hey, good afternoon. I've got a book that I would really like to recommend. It's called Cold Blood, Hot Sea by Maine author Charlene DeVonzo. It's going to be published in a week. It's a mystery with a climate change theme. It's set here in Maine in a fictitious coastal community. The mystery actually features Mara, who's a female oceanographer, and her sidekick, another scientist. And it's very entertaining. It's got this underlying theme about the impact of climate change on our Maine coastal fisheries. I'm a kayaker myself, and I really like that the author takes readers out into Maine waters via sea kayaking. The oceanographer Mara uses her kayak as a tool in her quest against climate change denier bad guys. And there's even like a motorboat sea kayak chase. The author lives here in Yarmouth and is a marine ecologist and a kayaker herself. So she really has a good handle on what she's writing about. And I think our readers will really enjoy it.
Lee, thanks for your recommendation. We'll put it on our list. I appreciate it. Right now we have a recommendation from Sydney in Kennebunk, who suggests anything by Kurt Vonnegut for something fun but not too light or beachy. Mm. I went through a serious Kurt Vonnegut phase when I was in high school.
Yeah. Me too.
It appears it holds up.
I think it does. I was just actually talking with Ron Curry Jr. not long ago about rereading Vonnegut. Like, do we want to break the spell from when we all read him in high school and maybe interpret it differently as an adult, or do we want to hold on to that lingering goodwill we have?
Did you come up with a decision?
He was rereading some, and he said, you know, he was loving it. Yeah. And I reread God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, and loved it.
And great short stories.
Yes.
Harrison Bergeron. Oh, my God. I think about that story all the time.
We'll just add anything by Vonnegut onto the list. Great. Going to Bangor and Larry. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I would strongly like to recommend the book by Harper Lee, the prequel to To Kill a Mockingbird. It's called, if I can think of the name. I can't think of
it. Go Tell the Watchman.
Right. And I would recommend it because it may reveal the inner prejudices each of us have. I was very disappointed when people read it and they said, well, it shows Atticus was a racist. And I think if you carefully read Kill a Mockingbird, you see where Atticus was somewhat of a racist. it's like my dad. He never, ever once treated someone of color in any but 100% proper way. But then there were times like he would say, those people. And there were other times when we would take trips through Chicago, and he would say things like, look at all the chocolate kids.
Mm.
And it just, I don't know why it hurt me so badly when he would say those things. It did hurt, and I don't know why it did, because I was still a young
right.
boy, and it didn't, I don't know why it bothered me so much. But, yes, Atticus is a racist in the way that many people are racist, and I think the book is outstanding. And as I said, if you read the book, I think you'll see where places in To Kill a Mockingbird, Atticus.
Thank you, Larry. And you know, a whole lot has been written about this book, and it's been talked about a great deal. But, you know, Larry, I don't think everybody's read it. Have either of you had a chance to?
I have not.
I haven't
no,
either.
I've had, I don't think I will.
Really?
Yeah, I felt like I sort of made a choice not to read it for a lot of reasons, especially the, sort of the questionable way in which it was procured and published.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. We're going to move on to Monique, who's calling from Kennebunk. Hi, Monique. Go ahead.
Hi there. So I would second your recommendation of All the Light You Cannot See or We Cannot See. And I also have a question for all of you is with the increased amount of traveling we're all doing and the use of audiobooks. I read this book with a group, and half of us listened to it and half of us read it. And we had different experiences. Both experiences, versions were quite rich and interesting, but I was just sort of curious about how you were thinking about the use of audiobooks in the future of
Is it All the Light We Cannot See that half of you read and half of you listened to?
Yes.
And this is a book club, for a book club?
Yes.
Wow. And what was the difference in what people...
So I listened to it because I do a lot of traveling, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I found that some of the things that might get me caught up and distracted around the some of the names and some of the pronunciation of things, it just evaporated, and I was really able, as a result of the narrator being so eloquent, to follow the story in a way that I think has those little nuances of like the sound of laughter in a voice that you're otherwise left to imagine. So there are some advantages to imagining it yourself. I appreciate that. But there was something unique about the delicate nature of the young woman's sort of coming of age time. So yeah, there were some pieces of that. And I think for people who read it, again, they felt they sort of created a vision in their own minds that was a little different than ours at times.
So pros and cons. Yeah. Lily, are your books available in audiobook?
They are. They are. And I tend to, when I listen to an audiobook, I actually often tend to like the book better than I would have if I had read it. I'm much more forgiving. I just love being told a story. So sometimes I choose books that I know I'm not going to like the sentences, but I don't mind hearing them. I just wouldn't like seeing them, you know?
Wow. No, that's fascinating. I had a couple thoughts when the caller was talking. One, there's just been an interesting report, a study that audiobooks are off the charts in sales right now. This has been a huge year for audiobooks.
Interesting.
It is very interesting. And the other thing for me, I love to listen to them, especially traveling in Maine when we have to drive. One of the things I always look for and make sure, though, is that it's unabridged.
Yes, definitely.
And ideally the author reading it. There's something about that I love.
Mm-hmm.
It's somehow less performative.
Exactly.
Yeah,
the actors tend to, I think.
So, Lily, do you read your own?
No.
I would be quite a process. And to have to, and especially if you were, I'm thinking if you were a perfectionist, as most fine authors, I believe, probably are, to wanting to do each page over and over again, I think it would be maddening. But
do you mean, do I read it on the audio?
Yes, do you record that?
Oh, yeah, no, I have never been offered to do that, but I actually can't listen to my own audio recordings. It's just too, they don't read it the way I would have, and it's too much for me.
Josh, do you have a favorite audiobook? One that you just thought, oh, my gosh,
Well, I'll name two because I'll also break the rule I just set. So the John Rosnan book I mentioned, So You've Been Publicly Shamed, I just listened to, and okay. John Rosnan read that. And he's a wonderfully eccentric Englishman, so it's wonderful in his voice. But then the one I always think back to that it's not the author is All the Pretty Horses, read by Brad Pitt.
Oh.
Phenomenal.
Really?
Is really, really phenomenal. It's one of my favorite audiobooks.
And that's Cormac McCarthy's All the Pretty Horses.
That's
yeah.
Really interesting.
Yeah. Check that out. Well, Monique, thanks for calling in. Interesting conversation. We're going to move to Augusta and Connie. Hi, Connie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I love audiobooks as well. My favorite one is Tim Russert. He was reading about his dad. It was just a moving book. I just think there's so much emotion in if he's got a really good reader in an audio book. I love to read those. My recommendation is The Little Paris Bookseller by Nina George. And it's beautifully written. There were so many beautiful quotes in that, but I kept stopping and writing them down. And finally I stopped. There were so many. But it's about Paris, of course. It's about Provence. It's about all about books. And the bookseller, the shop is a boat on the Seine. So, and it's just a very fascinating book, and that's why I want to recommend it.
Do you happen to have any of the quotes nearby?
No, I'm not. I'm sorry. I'm in my car, and I pulled over.
Okay. Darn.
I was so fascinated with your program.
Well, thank you so much for calling in and for pulling over before you came on the air. Thanks for calling, and we'll add The Little Paris Bookseller to the list that we put on our Main Calling Facebook page.
It's a great program. I really enjoyed your guests as well.
Thank you. We'll move to Otis Field and Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Great.
I wanted to recommend Hauling Through.
Hauling
Through? H-A-U-L-I-N-G.
Hauling Through. Who writes it?
Peter Bridgeford. He's a Maine author. He lives on Peaks Island. I think this is his first book. It was excellent. It's a really good character novel.
What's it about?
It's about a man who's just graduated from college, and he lives in a coastal community in Maine, kind of a fictional coastal community in Maine. He ends up losing the love of his life. She moves on and leaves him here, and he's just trying to sort of come of age, a coming-of-age story.
Oh, well, thanks for calling in and sharing, and we will add it to the list. Going to Greenwood, Maine, and Amy. I just love where some of these calls are coming from today, places we don't usually have calls from. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm actually not in Greenwood at the moment because I'm in Norway, but I just pulled over in my car, too.
That's okay.
But I wanted to say how excited I am that Dean Bennett's book, Ghost Buck, won the nonfiction award last night at the Literary Awards because he's a native of Greenwood, and we're really proud.
Yay.
And he recently did a wonderful program for our local historical society about the book and about his family camp that inspired the book. And I have to confess that I have not yet read it, but my husband and son both have, and it's next up on my to-read pile after I finish Richard Russo's new book.
So you are following one of Josh's tips. Always know what you're reading next.
Right. And one more thing, my favorite audiobook, since you were talking about that, and I know Josh will appreciate this too, is The House of Sand and Fog by Andrea DeBuse III. And it is read by Andrea DeBuse and his wife, and it is the book that hooked me on audiobooks because it was so beautifully read and so well done.
Oh, that's great to know.
Yeah. 100% agree with that. It's phenomenal. Yeah, Fontaine's a wonderful reader too, Andre's wife.
Josh, tell us about Dean Bennett's Ghost Buck.
Dean was so lovely last night. So Dean's book won specifically the John N. Cole Book Award for Maine-themed nonfiction. And we've been really lucky to work with the Cole family for the past handful of years and hand out that award. And Dean got up and told the most beautiful story, and it was so Maine. He actually, in the late 80s, had taken a workshop through the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance taught by John Cole for a weekend. And that was a huge pivotal experience for him in his writing life.
Wow.
So to see that these decades later with him in his first book winning this, it was just beautiful, beautiful and so main.
Oh, wow. Well, Amy, thank you for calling. And Josh, thanks for sharing that story. We do have to take another short break, give you a break from taking notes on all these wonderful books. But we'll have more when we come back. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Maine Initiatives, cultivating social, economic, and environmental justice in Maine for over 20 years. MaineInitiatives.org.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, President Obama makes a historic visit to Hiroshima, the Taliban choose a new leader after a U.S. drone strike kills Mullah Mansour, and a far-right candidate in Austria narrowly loses the presidential election.
Join us for Hour 2 of the Diane Rehm Show coming up today at 2 o'clock. That's just 20 minutes.
Diana Nyad has never forgotten something her father told her many, many years ago.
The day I turned 5, he said, look in the dictionary, definition, Nyad, woman, champion, swimmer. I became a swimmer, but that's not the word I heard. I heard the word champion.
The making of a champion, next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock and Wednesday evening at 11 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, one of our favorites, Summer Reads, suggestions for what to put on your beach or lake or camp reading list. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We're here with Josh Baldwell and Lily King. Sally writes in from Portland, I loved Euphoria.
I just finished
One in a Million Boy by Monica Wood. Fantastic. And also just discovered Camilla Gibb. Don't miss this amazing writer. And we have somebody reading Richard Blanco's, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, I know, Prince of Los Cocoyos. Reading this sitting on a porch swing is a great way to spend a summer day or two. It's a wonderful, honest memoir, and one cannot discount the fact that he chose to move to Maine. This is from Gene and Sullivan. And my favorite book of the year, this is from Rod in Saco, All the Single Ladies, Unmarried Women, and the Rise of an Independent Nation by Rebecca Traister. This is an absolutely fascinating book, deeply researched and a joy to read, based on the author's personal experience and interviews with about 100 women. Traister has deep Maine roots. Her mother was raised on an rustic farm, and Traister writes movingly of her grandmother in the book. This is timely as well because she provides insights into the changing politics of American society. So more for our list. You all read either one? Okay. Well, you can add them to your list.
Yeah. I'm writing them down right now.
So before we get back to the phones, I want to say, what is on your guys' list? What are you saying? I am going to read this summer. Lily King.
All right. Next on my list, to follow your prescription, is The Door by Magda Szabo. Have you read it? Have you heard about this book?
Everybody is
telling me how phenomenal this book is. It's about two women in communist Hungary, and it is supposed to be extraordinary in translation, and people are going crazy over this book. Also, Preparation for the Next Life by Atticus Lish. Have you read it?
Yeah, it's on my list. Yeah.
I've heard from so many people that it's phenomenal. It's a love story between a Iraq war vet and a Uyghur immigrant in New York City. Also, I did forget my one nonfiction on the list is Love and Other Ways of Dying by Mike Paternity. It comes out in paperback, I think, this week. Somebody's raising their arms over there. It's such a great book. He's so talented. And Portland's Zone,
yeah. And if anyone from the MacArthur Genius Award is listening, I'll give them Mike's address. So
truly.
Indescribable. Just such a brilliant writer.
What's on your list, Josh?
Novel-wise, out in June is the new Annie Proulx, Barkskins. I'm going to eat that up. Annie Proulx doing 300 years of one family. And probably the only Annie can do.
Where?
Immigrating to the U.S. and then moving across. And then for nonfiction, in July, Gay Talese's first book in quite a while, The Voyeur's Motel. which was excerpted in The New Yorker and is just mind-blowing and interesting. And then I always, in the summer, I'm always reading food writing too. And this year I have, it's not brand new, but American Terroir, Savoring the Flavors of Our Woods, Waters, and Fields by Rowan Jacobson.
Do you cook or do you just like to read food writing?
I do cook. I grew up in a cooking family. My dad worked for, was a food salesman forever, and my mom was a chef. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. So I like food writing.
From Facebook, do your panelists have recommendations for summer reading for children? My most favorite for young children is Mother Bruce by Maine author Ryan Higgins. Josh, I know your daughter has outgrown children's books, but
she
what were her favorites?
But you know, she just is really interesting. She actually just went back. Maybe this is because she's going to be a senior in high school next year, so she's having almost like a panic regression. A freshman. Did I say senior?
You did. I was like, I have the senior.
Freshman in high school. Oh, my God. I'm ready to be done with high school, apparently, subconsciously. But anyway, she just went back and reread because she loved The Hunger Games. Before that, she had read Suzanne Collins' earlier series called Gregor and the Underworld, I think. And there's maybe a handful of those. And she went back and reread all of those over like a week or two. And you haven't read those for years. But those are for a younger age, younger than the Hunger Games were for.
When I was a girl, I reread Harriet the Spy about 12 times. Yeah. But I don't know if that would be as pertinent to today's children, Lily.
For me, it's definitely Judy Blume was my go-to person when I was a kid. And my children and I loved reading The Penderwicks. I think there are three of them. And oh, just heaven. And then there's a book that I haven't read that I'm going to read. And I kind of want my kids to read it, too. My girls are now 15 and 17. But it's come so highly recommended, and I can't believe I'd never heard of it before a couple of months ago, called Sunset Song by Lewis Gressick Gibbon, sorry. And it's about a young Scottish girl in the early 20th century, and I think it goes through several decades, maybe even more of her life. And I've heard it say that it's the best Scottish book.
It's like, wow.
And I don't know it.
Wow.
We're heading back to the phones, and we're going to get Gregor from Brooksdale. Hi, Gregor.
Hi, Dick Gregor, not Gregor from the Underworld. my summer read suggestions, White Dog Fell from the Sky. It's by a Maine author, Eleanor Morse.
That has been recommended. Yeah, go ahead.
A woman living in Botswana who I went to school with. Yeah.
That's been recommended on prior shows that we've done. So you're not the only one, Gregor. Thank you for that recommendation.
And also Tribe by Sebastian Younger. It's nonfiction, but it's all about building community. And then for fun, I'm going to read Stella Gibbons' Cold Comfort Farm. Mm.
All right. We're all taking notes. Thank you, Gregor, for your call. We're going to go to Margie in Jonesboro. Hi, Margie. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, the book is Hell If I Know. I know. Watch the title. But it's my son wrote it, Ronald Bruno, and it's about religion on the top and his explanation on the bottom. And I did the painting for the front cover and the back cover. And I don't sell any of this stuff. I have paintings covering my walls. But the book, when he 3 years ago, he sent me the paperwork, and I thought he did a great job. And it's the top is like the religious, you know, from books and stuff. And the bottom is his interpretation for people that don't understand it. And he did a great job. The name Hell If I Know, he said, well, maybe I shouldn't have put Hell If I Know because maybe people will be scared, you know. But the front is about all these buildings from all over the world and a big pit of fire. In the back is a lion and a lamb and two little kids petting a lion and a lamb with a waterfall and everything. He says, I should have put that on the front cover.
Well, thank you for calling, Margie. I hope you're doing well. We're going to move on, though. We're going to go to Steve, who's calling from Unity. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to recommend David Downey's Paris, Journey into the City of Light. That second Paris is italicized, so I'm assuming he wants us to pronounce it the way Parisians do, but I'm not going to attempt that. It's the perfect book for anyone planning a trip to Paris this summer, or for anyone like me who wishes he were. I was actually in Paris 3 summers ago, and I wish I'd read this book before I took my trip. It would have enhanced my experience enormously.
Is it fiction or nonfiction?
It's nonfiction. Downey's a food and travel writer, originally from San Francisco, but he was sent on assignment to Paris in his 20s, and he fell in love with the city and never left. That was a couple of decades ago. He married another expat American, a photographer named Allison Harris, who he met there. She provided the black and white photographs that head every chapter, beautiful photos. Their photos alone are worth the price of the book. It's a really unusual sort of travelogue. Downey knows the city inside and out, especially the cafes and bistros, as you'd expect of a food writer, but also seemingly everything in between. It's as if he's taking you on a walk through the city at all levels in place and time. He divides the book into 3 parts, places, people, and phenomena. the main phenomenon being the famous light, both natural and artificial.
Well, Steve, thank you so much. It's going on the list. I really appreciate it. We're going to move on to Bucksport and Brooke. Hi, Brooke. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, great. Thanks. I just wanted to jump in about another great book for kids this summer, and it's an older book, but it really stands up. Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nymph. I just read that to my 7-year-old daughter, and it was just such a pleasure to read out loud, and she loved the book. So,
I remember that book.
So good.
I can't remember who wrote it, though. Remind me.
And I've tried to read her some other books that meant a lot to me as a child. In fact, Harriet the Spy was one of them. And they haven't really worked for her. But this one was just fantastic. And the writing is pretty sophisticated. But, you know, so it was a pleasure for both adults and children.
And who's the author again?
I'm so sorry to say I don't know. And as soon as
I know. And all of us have it on the tip of our tongues. I can tell. It's driving me crazy.
Is it Robert Cromier? He also wrote Z for Zachariah, which is
actually
a phenomenal...
I don't know, and I'm so sorry. I feel horrible about that, but it's really worth reading. And, you know, older kids could read it out loud if they're reading chapter books, but for my 7-year-old, it was great for the two of us.
Okay, it looks like somebody's typing furiously in our control room, so we'll know in just a second. Let's see here. Robert O'Brien. There we go, the answer. Ding, ding, ding. Modern technology. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to Freeport and Jerry. Hi, Jerry. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
Great.
Good. I've got a great young adult novel that was just released Tuesday. It's called Please Don't Tell. It's about a complicated relationship between two girls, twin sisters. And the author is Laura Timms from Freeport. It's her first book. And it's reviewed by Goodreads.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jerry.
You can log on to Goodreads and actually see the review of the book.
Oh, terrific. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. We're going to add that to our list. And Peggy from Augusta wants to plug Jesmyn Ward, Men We Reaped, and Salvage the Bones. So
I haven't read that.
I haven't. It's gotten a lot of great attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're running out of time, but Lily, I wanted to ask you, what are you working on right now?
Oh, a novel going very slowly. That's about all I can say.
Do you have a deadline?
No, I have a self-imposed deadline, but no.
And how's that going?
Not very well.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. All these people giving you invitations to do things like coming on radio shows, I'm sure it's not helping very much. And then, of course, summer's coming. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Josh, do you know anything, all the authors that you know, anybody else working on something exciting that you just can't wait to have come out?
I'm waiting for the next Lily King.
No pressure.
No. Not right off the top of my head.
Okay. Oof. Okay. Well, think about it. Lily, let me ask you, though. I mean, obviously, in Euphoria, you spent a lot of time doing research. Is the book that you're working on now as research-driven as what you've written before?
No, it's interesting. I've started and abandoned 2 books that were heavily researched. So I did all of the research,
oh my gosh,
20 pages, and didn't feel it just didn't feel it, and happened twice, and now I'm just writing a novel out of my imagination entirely.
Wow. And do you think you'll come back to those two at some point?
I definitely do. It just, for whatever reason, just wasn't the right moment.
Wow. Well, Rick Russo said he had started Everybody's Fool a long time ago and he put it aside for a while.
He put it aside and wrote the whole memoir, wrote Elsewhere, and then came back to it. So he wrote and finished a whole book.
So interesting.
Yeah. Okay, I thought of two writers that we both know and love as we were talking. Bill Rohrbach has been like a machine as of late.
Oh,
and,
I love hearing that.
His new book is already, he's correcting the galleys.
Oh my God, that's fantastic.
It'll be out this year.
I love his work.
And Lewis Robinson's next novel is done and it is out there.
That's...
So I don't know if it has a release date yet, but
those
two.
It's so good. I read an early draft of that book and I loved it. He's a fabulous writer too. So. Fabulous.
And Josh, I think we've made it pretty much through your list, which you were kind enough to provide us with ahead of time, except we have not talked about paperbacks, books that are now in paperback that didn't used to be. So what are your summer reading paperback books?
Yeah, if you like to travel light, two of my favorite books from last summer are just out in paperback right now, like this within weeks here. So the new Bourne movie is coming out this summer, and if you love that kind of big Robert Ludlum international thriller espionage, Gail Lynn's The Assassins is fantastic. I think that's out this week even. And then next week, Peter Nichols' novel The Rocks is just breathtaking. It's hard to describe. Set in Majorca, the entire narrative happens backwards from current day to the 40s. Beautiful, beautiful.
All right. So we really don't need to read anything other than main authors this summer, except for maybe one or two. Well, what a joy it was to have both of you on the program today. Lily King, Josh Bodwell, again, we will comprise a list. I'm not sure how long it will take, but keep an eye on the Main Calling, MPB and Main Calling Facebook page, and we'll get it to you. We'll assign our intern that job. Poor thing. So anyway, Lily King's first novel, The Pleasing Hour, was a New York Times notable book. Her 2014 novel, Euphoria, won the Kirkus Award for Fiction in 2014, the New England Book Award for Fiction, and was a finalist in the National Book Critics Circle Awards. Josh Bodwell, huge promoter of Maine Writers and Publishers as the executive director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. Sydney Campbell answered your calls. Maine Calling is produced by Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 7. Yes, the rest of the week we are rebroadcast at 8. On Fridays, we're rebroadcast at 7. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.